Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
How many of y'all can identify with Louis C.K. there? How many of y'all have had that conversation with your kids? Anyone? Yes. If you haven't, it's because you're holding on to this notion that somehow you can try to be fair to your kids. And this series we've been talking about, putting the pieces together, helping your kids put the pieces of life together. And so we've been looking at a few things where if you don't understand it, you'll be very frustrated in life. And so we want to help our kids understand these sort of life rules, life laws. Like, you got to be responsible for what you is your responsibility. You need to take ownership of your stuff. You will reap what you sow. Men and women can't be friends, all these kind of things. And then this week we're looking at just a simple truth and the fact that life isn't fair. Life isn't fair. And I'm going to say something that right now you're probably going to think I'm going overboard. And if you don't know me at all, you're probably going to think it's just a typical preacher-y kind of thing to say. But I hope to, by the end, just in 30 minutes or less, okay, 35, maybe 40 minutes or less, convince you of the truth of what I'm about to say for shock value on the front end. And that this notion that life isn't fair. We have this misguided notion that although life's not fair, it ought to be. And I would dare to say that it's not just misguided, it is also unbiblical, and here we go, and it's even satanic, that you think life ought to be fair. That's my opening statement. Just ride with me, file that away. If you've never been here before, just grant me 30 minutes, and then you can tell me I don't know what I'm talking about, and I'm closed-minded. You can throw whatever name you want at me. I don't care. You can even email it to me. You can just tell me in face. I don't care. Just ride with me on this, because what happens is we want to be fair. We think life ought to be fair, and so we kind of look and say, okay, I know life isn't fair, and if you're a parent, here's what usually I think happens. At least this is what happens for me. I understand life's not fair, but that's kind of a hard news to break to your little kid. That's kind of what's funny about that scene. Here's this, like, what, five-year-old little girl? Life's not fair, kid. Tough. You didn't get a mango pop. Your sister did. That's just it. You walk on. And that's a hard lesson to learn at 5, right? It's a hard lesson to learn at 35. So we think to ourselves, I'm going to shield my child from the cruelty of life and the unfairness of life as long as I possibly can, because in my home, when I'm in the domain of which I can control, I will make my home the way the world ought to be. It ought to be fair, and so I will make my home as fair as it possibly can. So if I do it for my daughter, I'm going to do it for my son, right? And if I only have one cookie, I got this ingenious plan. I let one of them break it in half and let the other one choose. Is there anything more fair? How many of y'all do that? Anyone? Yeah. Is there anything more fair than that? Because we want to be fair. And if you get to get one more ride on the roller coaster, then you get one more ride on the roller coaster. And so we try to divvy it, make everything fair. The problem is we come into situations where we can't always be fair. There's sometimes only one mango pop. And sometimes it just doesn't work out to be fair. Like, how do you solve this one? Let's just say that you do something crazy and ridiculous, dumb, and I think it's just stupid, and you give your 16-year-old a car. They don't work for it. You just hand them the keys. Now, I say this because my dad was a doctor. My mom was a realtor and made more money than my dad. Just do the math on that, okay? My parents did not buy me a car at age 16. Instead, my sister and I put our pennies together and bought a rusted-out old beater Honda Accord. I won't get into that car. I didn't own my own car until I graduated college, okay? So maybe one of you parents, you're rolling in it. You just, you know, whatever. You give your kids a car. They turn 16. So when you give your daughter a car at 16, what is your 14-year-old son thinking in that very moment? Not only is he thinking, I can't wait to be 16, he is picking out which car he's going to get, as if he has a say in the matter, right? So, and I was like, you better look at what daddy's driving now, and maybe, you know, in 10 years, it might be yours. That's kind of maybe where some of you are. You're not going to pick it out. It'll be whatever. So the 16-year-old gets a car. Let's just say you gave the 16-year-old a car in 2006, okay? And the 14-year-old's saying, I just can't wait for 2008. Well, what he didn't know back in 2006 about 2008 is that there'd be called the housing bubble burst. And what that means is now mom and dad are financially upside down on the house and everything else that they have. And on top of that, their government contract ran out and is not going to be renewed. And now dad's looking for work. And so he turns 16. And what is he expecting? A car. So what do you do as a parent? How do you be fair in that moment? Do you break every good rule of financial sense? Do you go into debt? Do you ignore Dave Ramsey and do whatever just so you can be fair and give this child a car? Do you give them your car and you and your wife then share a car? Do you go and repo the car that your 18-year-old has and say, I know you thought that was your car, that was just a loaner, I only give out cars for 2 years at age 16, and you repo that and then give it to the, what do you do? Or do you just come to your now 16-year-old and say, man, I'm sorry, we wanted to do this, we just can't. And what are they gonna say back? That is not fair. And of all the times to not do something fair, I mean, who cares if I didn't get the mango pop or the big Oreo cookie? This is a car, for goodness sakes, right? This is what you're saving up for. This is what you're holding out for, right? It just can't be fair. There's a lot of situations like so sometimes you can't be fair. Sometimes it's just hard to figure out what fair is. I don't think there's anything more controversial or more difficult to determine fairness than when it comes to what we get paid, salaries. And if you think it's unfair for what you get paid, believe me, it's even harder being on the other side of the table where you're having to try to set salaries. Now, at Essential, I don't set salaries. I don't make any of our financial decisions here. That has been turned over to a team of trustees. There's 7 of them that meet every single month. As a matter of fact, this is the second Sunday of the month where they will be meeting. I sit in the meetings. I'm just there as an advisor and share with them things that are going on, but they make all the decisions. And so when it comes to salaries, it's this agonizing, grueling process of setting salaries. And the question is what is fair? So we first dealt with this issue when we hired Rick Eschenberg to be our co-pastor. How many of y'all remember Rick Eschenberg? Anybody? So he's not here, but if he listens on tape, let's give Rick a big round of applause. You don't know. Rick is the reason why we are where we are at right now. I had never pastored a church larger than 200 people. Our church at the time was only running about 130. Rick had been on staffs of churches over 1,000. He had more years of experience in ministry than all of our staff could put combined doubled. Okay, he was making a salary far north of what I was making, and he was in between jobs, visited Essential Church on a Sunday, loved the church, and said, I want to be a part of this. And I said, that's great, I can't afford you. And so we started talking. He said, what could you afford? And I went back to the trustee team, and I said, this is an amazing opportunity. What can we afford? And basically, you know, came up with about a salary of about $8,000 a year. Is what we could afford. And so we said, well, in faith, what if we like pushed ourselves? Well, if amazing things happen, we might be able to afford $25,000 a year. So we came back to Rick, believe it or not, and said, Rick, here's the deal. We are going to trust God in faith that we could pay you $25,000 a year. Now, I know you've got 2 master's degrees, and I know you've have 34 years of ministry, and I know you're far more qualified to have my job than even I have right now, but that's really what we have. And he says, okay, I'll do it. I just want to be here. That's why we gave Rick a round of applause. I'm almost tearing up thinking about it. That's why we gave Rick a round of applause. He mentored me as a co-pastor, and I was sort of like a semi-lead pastor. He mentored me and taught me how to lead a church. It was an amazing experience. Well, what happened when we brought him on? We were running about 120, 130 when we brought him on. Within 3 months, we were given this facility out of the blue. The church had doubled in size, okay? And as a trustee team came back, and I came and I said, listen, this has been amazing. My advice would be to double his salary. That still doesn't even get him waving hello at the salary he used to have, or at least gets a part. Now, you have to know about pastor salaries. When I say $50,000 a year, you're thinking like you get $50,000 a year. No. Very different. This is $50,000 total package, okay? This means that as a pastor, you're self-employed, so you pay 100% of your self-employment tax, which means 15% of your paycheck goes straight to the government. So take that $50,000 minus out 15%. Then if you give anything to 401k or retirement, take that piece out. And then your health care, you take that out. Any life insurance or disability, you take that out. And what you're left over with then is this sum somewhere in the, upper 20s, low 30s. And he has 35 years experience and 2 master's degrees. And so I came in and I said, we need to double his salary. Because as a church, we're growing. Our offerings have increased. We need to double that. And there was a new trustee in the team. And they looked at it. They just saw the report. Before anything was said, they just saw the report and the recommendation. They said, I'm sorry. I have a problem here. I don't know what the background is on this, but I see something ridiculous in here where we're proposing to double somebody's salary. In the field I work in, we're at most a 5% increase. Nobody gets a 100% increase. And the thought came back, says, yes, but in your line of work, I doubt seriously that somebody would ever come and work for you with two master's degrees, 34 years of experience, and take, like, I don't know, an eighth of what they could be paid anywhere else in the country to work. You see how the issues of perspective changes what's fair. And over time, it's been a hard thing, because we have staff members all the time who come here and take less money because they love what's going on at this church and they love being a part of your community. So what do you do when they're amazing knockout performers? Do you say, well, you know, teachers last year got a 0.5% raise over the past 5 years. Is that what we do? Or do we go and say, well, let's let our budget determine it. And that, what that usually means for a church means, let's see what the minimum amount we could possibly pay them without making them leave. Which is always encouraging, right? Or do you say, what would it cost us to replace somebody of their skills? You know, what is fair in the midst of all this? What happens when you have one employee who's making at the top end pay grade for their job, then you have another employee who's come in at 20% less than their pay grade, but both of them are doing an amazing job? Do both get a 3% raise? Or do you give this one like a 10% raise so he can be brought up within waving distance of what a fair market value is for him? What's fair? How do you determine fair? And then when everybody finds out, you know, where they're at this year, and if they were to compare, which we hope they don't, why? Because why do people say don't compare salary numbers? Why? Jealousy. Why? Because we all assume it's not fair. It's not fair. And it's interesting. This is such an issue. Even Jesus told a parable, a story about salaries and fairness. You know that? This thing goes back thousands of years even. It's so much so it's even recorded in your Bible. You'll find it in Matthew chapter 20. He tells this parable about these guys who get paid a salary, and they're questioning what is a fair rate to get paid. That's kind of at the heart of the illustration, because you know this has always been an issue for people. And so he tells this illustration, and it's in Matthew chapter 20. I'm going to start reading it, but I'm probably going to summarize, paraphrase, read it. I don't know how I'm going to tell the story, but anyways, it's a great story. He says, Matthew chapter 20, it says, "For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard." He says, "And he agreed to pay them at a denarius for a day's work and sent them out into the vineyard." So let me tell you a little backstory here. First of all, a day's work was a 12-hour workday, 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. roughly, okay? So a denarius was the going rate for military pay, okay? So this is not minimum wage. Okay, I know some of you, you know, if you just got out of boot camp or something, I know you're about there, but I'm just saying, just, you've been in for a while. Picture what your pay is. That's at least skilled labor rate for workmanship. Because when I used to be a construction worker, and like if minimum wage was like 7 or 8, we were making 25 a skilled carpenter, okay? So he's basically paying a skilled worker rate to a minimum wage job. Do you get this? So this is like 3 times what you ought to be paying per hour. So if you're, back in the day when I was doing construction, I got 25 an hour, which would be 300 a day if I was working for 12 hours. Okay, so picture you walk up, and this is always, I always think of Birmingham, Alabama, which is where I lived back when I was doing construction work. And at the BP station on my way to work was this local like labor pool. And it's basically where people who were born in other countries would go there to try to hope to get picked up for a day's work somewhere. And usually the going rate in Birmingham was $10 an hour. And so now imagine if you showed up in a pickup truck and said, "I'll take as many of you guys as want to come, and I'll pay you $25 an hour for the day." How many are getting in your pickup truck? They're hanging off the sides. I'll walk. And trust me, they will get there. They will find a way, and they will get there. And what are they thinking the whole ride over to your place? They're high-fiving. They're like, "I don't know who this guy is. Is he some sort of wealthy guy? Does he just not know what the going rate is? But this is awesome. They're high-fiving. We're eating good tonight," right? That's what they're thinking. So what ends up happening, he takes them back, gets them working. About 9 in the morning, so 3 hours later, he goes back up to the BP station. He sees some others standing around the marketplace. I love how it says standing around the marketplace, because our BP was called BP Marketplace. So they're standing around the BP Marketplace. They're doing nothing. So he says, "Hey, you guys go work in my vineyard, and I'll pay you whatever's right." Now, why does he not have to negotiate or barter salary at this point? Well, if you don't, see, this is how, gosh, you guys are so insulated from the world. The reason why you don't know is because you don't know what it's like to be a day laborer. I used to be in construction. And if any of y'all ever seen the movie Courageous, they capture this picture very well. There's a guy named Javier in that movie. And he goes out to a job site just hoping to get picked up for the day, and he doesn't get picked up. And I'll tell you, I don't know how women deal with this, because I don't know what women, how they feel, but for a man, like a man. Now, I'm not talking about like a boy who plays or a man child who plays video games on the couch and doesn't and thinks somehow somebody he's owed life. I'm talking about a man who wants to care for his family. There is nothing more frustrating and difficult and heartbreaking than being unemployed. It's awful. And if you've been there, you know. You know. There is nothing worse when you're a salesman and the sales aren't coming. It's just an awful feeling, and you got to come home and tell your now 16-year-old, we cannot afford to buy you a car. And you got to look at your wife and say, you've got to go get a job because I can't make mortgage. There is nothing more heart-wrenching than that. And at 9 o'clock, the guys who are there at 9 o'clock, they didn't get picked up at 6 o'clock. That's why they're still there at 9 o'clock. So at 9 o'clock, you'll take anything. You'll take anything. And here's the other thing you got to know about this. These people live like most of the world today live. Most people in the world today live on less than $2 a day, okay? And they don't have a 401k, and as much as, you know, you don't like having to pay Social Security tax, they don't have Social Security waiting for them when they retire. They don't have a rainy day savings fund that Dave Ramsey encouraged you to have for $1,000. They don't have a credit card to bail them out. Rather, back in this day and time, this actually connects, by the way, with the Lord's Prayer. There's a part of the Lord's Prayer you guys probably say, don't even know what it means. You think you know what it means. You don't have a clue what it means. There's that little line, you just kind of breeze over it right before you get to, like, forgive me for all the junk I did. There's a line you say in there that says, give us this day our daily bread. Okay. You have no clue what that means. What that meant for them was, Lord, please let me get a job today so that I can earn enough money so I can buy food tonight to feed my family tonight and tomorrow morning. And Lord, please tomorrow, give me this day my daily, give me a job that I can get enough money for daily bread. That's what it was. And if I didn't work today, we didn't eat today. So what are you thinking at 9 o'clock? You're going hungry. So if somebody shows up and says, we'll pay you anything at 9 o'clock, you'll take it, right? So 9 o'clock, you'll hire me? Oh, thank, because here, if you're still there, and this was one of the most heartbreaking things driving by the BP, you know, around lunchtime, because you would see guys, they would start trickling out of there around 10 o'clock or so, because like, well, I didn't get picked up today, might as well just go home and sit on the couch. But there would be these guys, like these hopeless, you know, romantic types who just sit around with this vision or thought that just maybe somebody might come around noon for somebody who needs some work. And it doesn't really happen. So this guy goes, shows up at 9 o'clock. Anybody want to work? Everybody gets on the truck and goes. Then it says he comes out again at noon. Then he comes in again about 3 in the afternoon and did the same thing. So if you're there at noon, you're there at 3, you'll take anything. I don't care if you pay me $1 an hour. I'll just get something so I can buy some food. So then he goes back at 5 o'clock. Now, workday ends at when? 6. Okay, you guys pay attention. It's great. So workday ends at 6. 5 o'clock. He goes out there, and he sees some guys. It says, and he said he found others at 5 o'clock standing around. And he says, why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing? And he says, because no one's hired us. So he said to them, will you guys go work in my vineyard too? How awesome is that? I don't care if you pay me a quarter. I'll do it. You know, whatever. I'll do it. So they do. So here's the thing about this story that we overlook. And maybe we overlook it because of our own experience. Maybe we overlook it because we've heard it taught in the past. I always thought, and maybe because it was the way I was taught, I always thought that it was an issue of needing more people to get the job done. Because you've probably been there. If you've ever done a task and you're kind of like, it's getting close to the end of the day and you realize you need more people to finish this job up if you're going to be done by 6. Nowhere in the story does Jesus ever say anything about the work that needs to be done. Where's the focus the whole story? On the people who need a job. You notice that? Says he goes back, sees people standing around, you guys come work. He gets there at 5 o'clock and he says, why are you guys hanging out here? Okay? And they say, because we didn't get a job. Now, the only reason, okay, he hires them is because they needed a job. It's the only reason we're given the text why he hires them. And that's because of his compassion for them. And tell you, when you drive by the BP station at noon and you see a guy sitting on the corner who desperately wants, I'm not talking about the guy who's holding up a sign that says, we'll work for food and wouldn't do a day's labor if you paid him, literally. I'm not talking about the handout guy. I'm talking about the guy who genuinely wants to work and nobody will hire him. It is a gut-wrenching scene. And moved with his compassion, every time he sees one of those guys, he puts them in his car and he takes them home, gets them to work. All out of compassion. End of the day comes, and the story goes on. It says this. He says, as an evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, call the workers in and pay them their wages. Start with the last ones I just hired an hour ago. And the workers were hired about 5 in the afternoon, worked 1 hour. They received a denarius. They received a full day. They received $300 for working 1 hour. How awesome is that? Think they were expecting that? No. Was that fair? No. No. It's not a trick question. Okay, it's not a trick question. Not fair. Not fair. Okay. So, what are you thinking that people in the back of the line who got there at 6 in the morning are now thinking? Well, if he gets $300 for an hour, I can't even do the math. What's that, like $2,400? Well, I know he's not going to give me $2,400 for a day's work, but I don't know, maybe like what, $600,000? I don't know. I mean, if you get $300 for an hour, 12 hours, I can't wait. We going to sizz. White Men Can't Jump. Anybody seen the movie? Moving on. All right, so what happens, though, he pays every guy who comes up to the front of the line $300, regardless of what time they showed up to work. And when they received it, it says they expected to receive more, but each one received the same amount. And when they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. 6 o'clock in the morning, what's their opinion of the landowner? He's awesome. He's high five. 6 o'clock at night, what's their opinion of the landowner? He messed me over. He done me wrong. I don't know. Of all the things that have ever happened to me in my life, this has got to be the worst injustice that's ever happened upon a man. Right? And then what do they say? He grumbled to the landowner and says, those who were hired last worked only 1 hour, they said. You made them equal to us. But we have borne the burden of the work and the hottest part of the day. And if any of y'all were out working the last 2 days in the yard or outside, you know what he's saying here. These people do live in the desert, people. They experience this every day, the hardest part of the job and the hottest part of the day. And yet the guy who shows up when the sun's gone down and we're just raking leaves under the tree, cleaning up everything, he gets $300 and I get $300? That's not fair. Yeah. But he answered one of them and he said, am I being unfair to you? There it is, right in the scripture. You can read it. It says, am I being unfair to you? Didn't you agree to work for $300 today? Weren't you high-fiving at 6 o'clock in the morning when I agreed to pay you 3 times the going rate? How am I being unfair? We had a contract. We had an oral agreement. You work for a day, I'll pay you 3 times the going rate. And now all of a sudden, you think I'm unfair. Now all of a sudden, you think I'm being mean. Now all of a sudden, you think I'm being wicked and rude and awful. He says, listen, take your pay and get out of here. Actually, this says, take your pay and go. I would just say it the way I would have said it. So take your pay and go. If I want to give the one who is hired at 5 o'clock $300, don't I have the right to do with my money what I want to do? Are you ticked off at me? Are you envious? Are you mad at me because I am generous? See, the whole story is about his generosity. Whole story of Atlanta generosity. The $300 a day, that was generous. Picking up people who just needed work just because they needed work, that's generous. Paying every one of them $300 so every one of them can go have a party with their family tonight, regardless of how long they were there, that's generous. But what do they conclude about his generosity and his love? It's wicked and it's evil and it's wrong. My opening premise, your sense and notion that life ought to be fair is satanic. Here's why I say that. What Satan is a master at doing, a master. And the reason why he's messed up our world is this, because he can take a good, wonderful, loving, generous thing and convince you that it is wicked. Then he can take the most wicked and vile and destructive thing and convince you it'll be great. That is what satanic thinking is. It is not about witches on the back of broomsticks. It is not about Harry Potter books. Or whatever else you know, and don't send me emails. I don't care what's in them. I'm not going there. Just listen to the story. Listen to the message. At least get what I'm trying to say, and don't write that stuff to me, okay? Nobody, but every once in a while I get somebody who's in here the first time and says it. Listen, the word Satan means deceiver. Deceiver. And the best deception is when you don't know what's happening. And the best deception is when you can take something that God does that is so loving and so kind and so generous, and Satan convinces you that God is wicked and evil and awful, and he is being unfair to you. And then he will take a lifestyle which will lead to your utter destruction. And he will say, this is the direction you ought to go. Get rid of that wicked, unfair God and go down this path. It'll work out great. And it destroys you. That's satanic, isn't it? So our notion of fairness, that life ought to be fair, not only is it unbiblical, I would even go so far as to say that it's satanic, because it convinces you that a loving, righteous, just God who is just trying to be kind and generous to everyone is wicked and evil. But life is unfair. And from our perspective, God seems unfair. But the thing about fair, it's a matter of our limited perspective and our very subjective opinion. It's so limited because I don't know all the details. I don't know all the facts. And I always assume that I do. I assume when I go into any argument, I assume in my marriage, I assume with my kids, I assume at my work, I assume with my salary, I assume that my perspective is right. Don't we? And that's why I say, this is unfair. Or I say, honey, I don't know why you think this is unfair. This is perfectly fair. And I don't even have to listen to what you have to say right now because I already know what I have to say and what I have done is completely fair. So just whatever. That ever happen in your life? Yeah, it happens all the time. So fairness, it's very subjective and it's based on your limited opinions. And because this happens, it leads to all kinds of conflict in our relationships. Now the thing is, God is not fair. And what I say with my kids is this. Life's not fair, it's different. Life's not fair, it's different. Before I get to that, though, I skip one piece that is very important. Ooh, and I'm at time. I'm going to talk really fast and go 5 minutes over. You ready? All right. Not only did they see something that was completely generous as being ungenerous, not only will you see people who are very generous as being ungenerous, okay? It will change your perspective on how you see people if you think life should be fair and they're not fair. It will also keep you from being generous. You know why? Well, you know, Matt, I would love to come over and help you move, but if I come over to help you move, then I'm going to have to go over and help Bobby move, and I'm going to go after help Daryl move, and I'm going to have to help Gene move, and all I'm doing is just moving, all right? I'm not a moving company. I can't be moving everybody every Saturday just because I got a pickup truck, all right? So I can't do it for everyone. Sorry, man. 2 men in the truck. Call them up. Right? No, I can't do it for you because, listen, you know, it wouldn't be fair. So we use it as a justification for not being generous with our finances, with our time. That's why I can't do anything nice, because it wouldn't be fair. And you hate it when somebody says that to you. And it will make you, it'll give you an excuse to be selfish. So your notion of fairness is now keeping, is making you see other people who are generous as ungenerous, and is keeping you from being generous. Like, see how destructive this whole notion of fairness is? And then lastly, it gets you really bitter and mad at God. And that's where I have to get this in the next 3 minutes. How many of you ever looked at your life and the situation, the stuff that you've had to go through, and said, God, this ain't fair. This ain't fair. Every one of us has been down that road. And sometimes you look at it, and I always say this, listen, if anybody has the right to look at God and say, life ain't fair, I'm there. I'll go toe-to-toe with anybody in any room, anywhere, anytime, and I can at least make the quarterfinals in the unfairness bracket of bracketology, okay? I mean, I've got a special needs daughter. I've had a wife who's passed away. I've been left as a single dad. You go down the line. I have been there. I have done that. I have lost my job. I have been unemployed. I mean, we can just go. I feel like George Costanza sometimes, right? There's a funny episode about that with him. I have every right to say, God, this ain't fair. Because I look, and here's the thing, we look at everybody else and go, look at, man, if I had Rob Steele's life, if I had his wife, if I had the perfect family that he's got, oh my goodness, wouldn't it be great? And I was like, dude, man, you don't know what I've been through. Like, I don't care what you've been through. It's worse than mine, right? But here's the thing. Every one of us has a Job story. Every one of us has, we go through the kind of experience that, if you don't know Job is, he's this guy in the Bible, all this bad stuff happened to him. Every one of us goes through something like that in our life. And you look at somebody who like, oh, yeah, perfect life. I mean, you know, they weren't even like really trying to have kids. And they end up with twins. Yeah, great, wonderful, thanks, you know, whatever, you know. We're over here, we can't even have one kid. Can't have one kid. Oh, the teenage girl, she doesn't want to have a baby, but yes, she has a baby. But yet we're here praying and praying and praying, and God never gives us a kid. So unfair. So unfair. I said, well, walk a mile in their shoes and see what they're going to deal with. Every one of us has something in our life where we say, God, this ain't fair. So we say, hey, listen, Life ain't fair. It's different. Life's not fair. It's different. It's different. And here's what you got to know. Every week I say, I think, the same thing. What is the whole point of this life? Please, somebody. Somebody. You're going to make a pastor cry. This life is about nothing more than establishing it. Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. I was going to quit and walk off and never come back. I say it every week. This life is about nothing more than establishing a loving relationship with God you'll enjoy for all eternity. That's the point of this life. Your 70, 80 years is so minuscule compared to all eternity, you can't even comprehend it right now. This life is about nothing more than establishing a loving relationship with God you'll enjoy for all eternity. So his hope, his point of everything you go through is that you would end up at the end of your life or somewhere in the process of your life with a loving relationship with him. Because eternity is what matters, not these 70 years. And you're going, God, my 70 years ain't fair. All that matters is that you end up with a relationship with me because eternity is what's at stake, and that's all that really matters. Now, here's the way this works out. Peter, in John chapter 21, Jesus basically says to him, I got to cut to the point here. Jesus says, listen, Peter says, listen, I know you looked at me and you denied me three times right before I got crucified because you were trying to save your own skin. Well, here's the thing. You're going to love me so much over the course of your life, they're going to threaten to crucify you, and you're going to say, go ahead and do with me what you will, and they will do it. And crucifixion was the most heinous form of torture ever invented upon man. And you know what Peter's response was? All right, I can do that. As long as he is. And he looks over at John, who's his best friend. These guys were rivals. And he says, what about him? Here's the deal. I will lead the pack if we're all getting crucified. But don't hang me out to dry here, okay? If we're all getting crucified, I will lead it. But don't tell me I get crucified and then he gets to, like, go on a yacht somewhere and sail around the world. Tropical living on the island of Patmos. What happened? Kind of. Anyways. And know what Jesus' response was? It's classic. He goes, what's that to you, bro? You can read it. It's actually in there. Look it up. It actually gives you a reason to look it up. You might not see the word bro. It's in the Hebrew. It's hidden. So he says, what about him? He goes, what's that to you, bro? In other words, it doesn't matter what happens to him. You got your life with me. You got your relationship with me. You got your experiences with me. He's got his experiences with me. They're different. And it ain't fair. They're different. Why? Acts 17 gives you the answer. God gives everyone life and breath and everything else. And from one man he created all nations. By the way, he says, life, God gives everyone every good thing. And yet you're sitting there complaining, God, you ain't giving me enough good things yet. Every good thing you've already had. And you're coming back and saying, God, you're not fair unless you give me more. Sorry, just let that sink in. That's a whole other point. Moving on. So he says, from one man he made all nations, they should inhabit the entire earth. And I'm going to personalize this. I'm going to pick on you again, Matt, this morning. And he says, Matt, I have marked out the appointed time in which you would live in history. Say, thank you, Lord, for making it at a time when there's air conditioning and indoor plumbing. All right? I have appointed the times in which you would live and the boundaries of your habitation. I've determined that you'd be born in America, the greatest country in the history of the world, with the greatest privileges and opportunities mankind has ever known. And I have blessed you in that way. You know why I put you in this situation? He says this. God did this so that you would seek him and you would reach out for him and find that he is not far from any one of us. And you're looking at all your stuff, all your life things that have been horrible and difficult and awful and unfair. You're saying, God, why? Why did you have me go through this? Why did I ever have to marry this person? Why did I have to go through all this stuff? You know, my kids, half the time, as they get older, what I notice, the older they get, the less they care about where their parents are. You notice that? Until something happens. And as soon as stuff goes wrong, as soon as they're broke at college, who do they come crying to? Who do they come running to? Who do they go looking for? Mom and dad. You know, the second something happens, they are seeking out and they are reaching out for mom and dad. And you've been in those times where you're kind of watching your son, you know, you're in the pool when they first start swimming. And I got this. Friends are around and they just, and they get about three paddles in, and they start drowning. What are they? And they're reaching, and you just pick them right up. I'm here. God places these things in your life so that you will seek him, you will reach out for him, and find that he is not very far from you. He is right there with you. You see, if you never had anything bad happen in your life, you would not need God, and you would walk away for eternity. You can argue with me on that one, but you're wrong. because you know you do it. You take him for granted, and you walk away, and you already haven't even thanked him for all the good stuff he's given you, except for one time a year before you get to eat Thanksgiving dinner. He's done amazing things for you. And yet, it's so often we look at God and we say, God, where were you when this happened? And we run off and walk the other way because you ain't being fair. And so it drives us from God. He says, no, it's the very thing that will drive you to me, and I'm here. Why don't we all have the same experience? Why? Well, because if we all had the same experience, I could go to Matt and say, hey, Matt, you're a year ahead of me right now. Your kids are just a little more. What did you do that day when one pooped his pants, one threw up on the couch, and the other one spray painted your car? What do you do? And I'd be like, I blew that one, man. I messed that up. Don't ask me. So I go over to Daryl and I say, hey, Daryl, what did you do the day, because we all have the same experience, right? What did you do the day your kid pooped his pants, the other one threw up on the couch, and the other one spray painted the car? Oh, here's what I did. Oh, thanks. All right, you this, you move on. I don't need God. I can find somebody else with the exact same experience and never develop a relationship with God in the process. But because each and every one of us has a unique experience of life, there's only one we can turn to, the author, the creator, the finisher, the sustainer, the giver of our life. He puts each one of us in these situations that are very different, so we'll reach out for him. It's not unfair. It's just different. You know what's really unfair? It doesn't matter what you've done, no matter what you've become, he loves you, forgives you, gives you a second chance. You know what's unfair? The rich young ruler comes to Jesus and says, what do I gotta do to heaven? He says, well, you know, you seem to love more money more than anything else. Why don't you give up your money and follow me? Like, oh, I don't know. He walks off. Two chapters later, a thief on the cross. What must I do to get in heaven? Don't worry about it. Close your eyes. 5 minutes, we'll be there. How's this unfair? Or how's this fair? It's just different. It's different. We're about to celebrate communion. It's a table representing complete, utter unfairness. You did not deserve to be forgiven of everything you've ever done. He did not deserve to take your sins on the cross. Yet love is unfair on your behalf. Would you join with me as we close? Father, you love us with such amazing generosity. And yet somehow, we must all confess this morning that at various times in our life, and maybe even right now, we have been convinced that you are cruel and unkind and unloving and uncaring because of something that we perceive to be unfair by our standard of fairness. And God, you are so good and you are so kind. And everything I've ever enjoyed comes from you. My very breath, my very body, whatever's left of it and whatever's still working is all from you to begin with. And this life is not what it's all about. It's about eternity and the relationship which I'm developing with you. And if I have to go through 75 years of heartache and misery, but in the end, I end up with you in eternity for all eternity, it'll all have been worth it, Lord. Help me see things from a perspective that will understand my life. Help me be grateful for the good times and the bad times. Forgive me for thinking that life is unfair and that you're to blame for it. But be thankful, Lord, for the circumstances you've brought in my life that have brought me to this point in my life where I can hear your gospel. And in Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.